The headlines: Iraq's new Prime Minister Mohammed al-Sudani is in Tehran for important talks with Iranian officials. Syria denounces the UN Human Rights Council's recent anti-Iran resolution, saying the West exploits international mechanisms for its own political goals. Plus, four more Palestinian fatalities are added to the list of Israeli crimes in the occupied West Bank. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. President Ibrahim Raisi says both Tehran and Baghdad attach significance to the fight on terror and any source of insecurity in the region. Raisi was speaking during a joint press conference with the visiting Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammed al-Sudani after the two officials held talks in Tehran. The Iranian president said a foreign interference will not bring security and stability to the region. He added that any kind of meddling will only add to regional problems. The Iraqi Prime Minister, for his part, said the nation will never forget Iran's support in Iraqi's fight against terrorism. The Syrian foreign minister has slammed the UN's recent anti-Iran human rights resolution, saying that the West is using international bodies as a tool to reach its own political goals. In a phone call with the Iranian counterpart, Faisal al-Mikdad described the resolution as arbitrary and unacceptable. The Syrian foreign minister said the move is part of ongoing Western measures against independent states in order to implement destructive agendas. He added that it represents a violation of the sovereignty of those states and their right to follow policies that suit the history and traditions of their people. Iran has strongly condemned the resolution by the UN Human Rights Council, which called for a probe into the country's riots that started in September. We talked to author and commentator John Stepling for his take on the recent anti-Iran resolution by the UN Human Rights Council and Tehran's reaction to it.
I think there's no reason at all for Iran to participate on any level with this, because it only serves to at least partly legitimize the process, and it's an illegitimate project. Iran has nothing to gain. I think they should sever all ties with the United States, I mean diplomatic ties, because I don't see the good that can come out of it at this point. The U.S. has sanctioned Iran. These are criminal sanctions. The United States sanctions almost everybody, but they have illegally sanctioned Iran. Iran agreed to the JCPOA, bent over backwards to meet all its requirements, and the United States tore it up anyway. The U.S. is very big on tearing up treaties and international agreements. Iran has done none of that, and yet they are constantly the object of this rhetorical abuse from the U.S., Israel, Saudi Arabia, European media. It's unbelievably biased, and it's very hard, I think, for the Western public to get an accurate picture of the situation vis-a-vis Iran, because much as it is impossible for Western public to get a picture of Russia, because the reporting is so extraordinarily biased and one-sided.
Another Palestinian falls victim to Israeli violence in the occupied West Bank, taking the total number of regime killings in the past 24 hours to 4. In the latest incident, Israeli forces shot dead a man in alleged car ramming near Ramallah. Earlier, regime troopers fatally shot two young men near the city. A fourth Palestinian was shot in the head during a raid on the town of Beit Amr in Al-Khalil. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says such developments will only strengthen the nation's uprising against the occupying regime. Israel has been carrying out deadly attacks against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank almost on a daily basis. The regime forces have killed more than 200 Palestinians in the area, as well as in Gaza, so far this year. An international conference has been held in the Gaza Strip to highlight the Israeli blockade and its dire consequences on Palestinians. The Israeli regime has kept the Gaza Strip under a tight blockade since 2007. Ashraf Shannon has more.
Hamas's Council on International Relations has held an international conference on the impact of the Israeli blockade. The event aims to shed light on the crippling Israeli blockade on more than 2 million Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip. The event was attended by figures representing the Gaza Government Committee and civil society organizations. They discussed ways to tackle the repercussions of the blockade. Living conditions and the standard of living in the Gaza Strip have been rapidly deteriorating under the Israeli blockade. The Hamas movement says Western countries, mainly the United States, are supporting the Israeli blockade.
The Israeli siege, unfortunately supported by the international community, mainly the Americans, have converted Gaza into the biggest open-air prison on earth. We can see the catastrophic impacts of this siege in every corner here in the Gaza Strip, which can develop up to a crime against humanity or an ethnic cleansing.
Speakers via video conference included Francesca Albanese, the special rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Palestine, as well as Richard Falk, the chairman of the Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor. Statistics show that most Gazans are impoverished and rely on handouts to survive because of the blockade. Unemployment and poverty rates have skyrocketed under the blockade. At the conference, attendees called for the immediate lifting of the inhumane siege.
This is a call to the world to stop its a silence over what's been going on the Gaza Strip, and to urge all governments of the world, in Europe and the United States and other parties around the world, to intervene actively to end this illegal and punishing siege on the Gaza Strip population.
In its final communique, the conference announced that the Gaza Strip is already devastated by the Israeli blockade and is edging closer to breaking point. The prolonged blockade has undermined all aspects of life in the Gaza Strip since 2007. Experts say the inhumane Israeli practices have deprived Palestinians of their rights. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
The Ukrainian president has warned his countrymen to prepare for new Russian attacks on infrastructure, saying the raids will not stop until Moscow runs out of missiles. Volodymyr Zelensky says he expects the attacks this week to be as bad as last week. He was referring to recent Russian missile strikes targeting Ukraine's energy infrastructure. Last week's barrage was the worst yet, leaving millions of people without electricity and water supplies. NATO, which has been a key ally of Ukraine in the war, has also predicted more attacks on Ukraine's power grid and infrastructure.
President Putin is now trying to use a weapon, use the winter as a weapon of war against Ukraine. And this is horrific, and we need to be prepared for more attacks. That's the reason why NATO allies have stepped up their support to Ukraine.
Stoltenberg was speaking ahead of a meeting of NATO foreign ministers in Bucharest on Tuesday and Wednesday. The NATO chief said that supplying Ukraine with air defense systems is likely to be high on the agenda. He added the ministers would also discuss providing spare parts, training, and ammunition to Kiev. Ukrainian authorities say the Russian missile attacks are aimed at harming civilians and amount to a war crime. Moscow has acknowledged the attack, saying that it seeks to reduce Ukraine's ability to fight and push it to negotiate. He has denied targeting civilians. A recent study shows that Brexit has caused a shortage of doctors in Britain. For more on that, we discuss the story in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
Stay tuned, it's news review time. A study shows that Brexit has compounded a shortage of doctors in Britain, with an estimated shortfall of 4,000 in major specialty areas from European Union countries. The study by the Nuffield Trust, an independent health think tank, indicates the UK relied on European doctors in several fields of medicine before leaving the bloc, but it suggests that recruitment of European medical staff has slowed down, falling below the projected increase. The survey shows if the pre-Brexit continued, there should have been more than 41,000 doctors from the EU or the European Free Trade Association, registered in 2021, and that is the crisis-hit state-funded health service, NHS, struggling after years of underfinancing. Last week, the Royal College of Nursing announced the first strike action in the union's 106-year history, citing pay, working conditions, and chronic staff shortages. Now, to get some insight on this, I'm joined by a couple of guests, our own Saeed Pourreza in our London bureau, Fra Hughes, journalist and author, as well as activist, also joining me from Belfast. Welcome to the show, both of you. So, Saeed, tell us about this a plethora of problems, you know, besetting the UK. As you know, we had energy crisis, and then COVID came and added to it, and then now we have the Ukraine-Russia war, and before all this, Brexit, and issues emanating from Brexit seem to be lingering on, like this shortfall and deficiency that the UK is facing in terms of number of doctors and medical staff. Tell us more about it.
Well, the first two reasons, Behrouz, is what you would hear the government here say as the main reason behind all the plethora of problems, as you say, that the country is experiencing. But you rarely hear anything about the elephant in the room, what the Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon said just a day or two ago, the Brexit conspiracy of silence. And gradually we're seeing the impact that the UK's decision to withdraw from the European Union has had in the immediate, of course, aftermath of it, post-2016, and in the years since. And this study, commissioned by The Guardian, carried out by the Nutfield Trust, having found that the UK's withdrawal from the single market, the European Union, has indeed had an impact on the number of doctors and nurses working for the National Health Service. Some reasons enumerated by Nutfield Trust, for example, from the perspective of the EU and EFTA, the European Free Trade Area doctors, when the UK-wide changes were introduced to immigration in 2020, they looked at the periodic costs that came with it, the bureaucracy of visas, and they started having second thoughts. Or up until 2018, you had the free movement of labor that ended with the point-based system that was introduced 2 years after. People started thinking, are we going to have, or will we, are we not going to have the right to remain in the UK, those doctors and nurses? And at the same time, of course, you have people who are leaving the profession, burnt out, you know, as a result of the strain that they had to undergo through the pandemic, people seeking other jobs, continuing to study or getting in other fields of study, and leaving the medical profession. And of course, as the Nutfield Trust mentioned, these are shortages in specific areas. And of course, if there are shortages in one area, then you will have the domino effect of it on perhaps other areas or people who work in different positions in a particular field, such as anesthesia or pediatrics or other fields, as mentioned by the Nutfield Trust. And one more point we heard also over the past few days, Lord Wolfson, he's the boss of the high street retailer Next, who also came out, he was, you know, a great Brexiteer. He backed the EU, the UK's withdrawal from the EU, saying that Brexit really turned out not to be what he had expected. And he's not the only voice who probably, in private or publicly, saying things like that. And it looks like, as we saw in this report, all of that has happened to be very true. And the 1 million man strong labor shortage that has affected the different sectors across the country, three quarters of UK companies have said over the past 12 months that they have experienced labor shortages directly as a result of Brexit.
Okay. Now, Fra Hughes, let me ask you about the ramifications and how great an impact this Brexit thing has had for Britons, with a special focus on, you know, the medical staff, their problems in the NHS.
Yes, well, I think we've already heard that a lot of this has come down through the problems with immigration and visa status. I think also that when the United Kingdom left the European Union, it sent out a very strong signal that they are Europhobic, that they are in many cases xenophobic, and there are parts of British society that definitely do not want immigrants, definitely do not want to be. Well, we've heard stories of people asking not to be treated by Pakistani doctors, not to be treated by people from the Philippines. So there's a vein of racism that travels throughout the whole of society and permeates everything to do with immigration and asylum-seeking refugees. It's not just the doctors and the foreign nurses. I mean, 1 in 10, if you look at the statistics, 1 in 10 nurses have either left or retired from the profession. 1 in 12 GPs have retired or left the profession or relocated. And we have 47,000 nursing vacancies in England alone. Now, when you couple all that with the austerity budget that was recently announced and the huge cutbacks that are coming our way, I think there is a ticking time bomb. I think between the people being overstressed, undervalued, underpaid, and not given the opportunity, and in many cases people, their real wage is now 20% below what it was several years ago. They're not keeping pace with inflation. So if your take home pay has dropped by 20% and prices continue to rise, and no wonder nurses are going to food banks and people are leaving the profession in their droves. And we have had 12 years of Tory austerity, which is bringing the NHS system to its knees. So that'll only increase the pressure, only increase the dissatisfaction from the nursing staff who are burnt out. 50% of them after a shift go home and they feel exhausted. So I think that definitely things are going to get worse before they get better, and I think there'll be more strikes and they'll be more prolonged. And one of the damning indictments of the government is actually the waiting lists and the length of time people are waiting in many cases for life-saving surgery.
Okay, appreciate that. Syed Pourreza in London and Fra Hughes in Belfast with their contribution.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Iranian Radio. Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
discovering Islam. The story of Tawheed is not limited to the creation of the world or oneness of God. Another important aspect of Tawheed is that we have to worship the one and only God. But why should we worship God? What is the purpose of worship? Why should we worship a God who does not benefit from our worshiping? And why is worshiping anything beside or in association with God the greatest sin according to the Quran? Man is a worshipping being and cannot be free from worship in one form or another. If we do not worship God, we worship other things, even including our ideas, our aspirations, or our desires. The moment we cease to worship, our life is disrupted.
The word in Arabic for worship is Aliha, which is used in the phrase La ilaha illallah. The word Aliha actually means a number of things. It means to worship. It also means to be obsessed with. It also means to rely on someone in time of need. It also means to be in love with someone. It also means, continuing the idea of obsession, to not be able to think of anyone else. To feel or to miss someone intensely when they're not present. And so when we say La ilaha illallah, we are saying there's no one worthy of worship or of love, of obsession, of reliance, no one worthy of me turning to them in time of desperation and need other than Allah.
Tawheed in worship is one of the most important aspects of Tawheed, for it's not a matter of belief anymore, but a matter of action as well. It shows how committed one is in their faith. It is the manifestation of the soul and heart of a believer in their practice.
Worship in action includes that your intention, you have to have ikhlas, which means pure sincerity for the sake of God. Not your ego, not to please others, not to please society, but to please the one that created you.
Worship is to adore, to praise, and to humble oneself towards the object of worship. The Quran states that some people take their fleeting desires as the objects of their worship.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Afara'aita man ittakhadha ilahahu hawa. Have you seen the one who takes his own base desire as his Lord? So associating partners to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not only worshipping an idol. The individual might worship his own lower self. When I'm obeying other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that can be my nafs. That itself is a form of shirk. As we know, we have two different types of shirk. The first type is shirk al-khafi. Shirk al-khafi is the hidden shirk. And the second type is shirk al-jali. It is the apparent one. The apparent one is the person in the temple worshipping, if he's truly worshipping the idol. But the khafi one, the hidden one, the minor shirk, is me taking my lower desire, taking the power, taking the position, taking my wealth as my Lord. And both of these types of shirk takes me to destruction, because it's taking me away from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
All human beings are bound to worship something. It is in our nature to worship. The only thing is, are we picking the right authority, or the Quranic word is ilah, or God, to worship? Quran actually details a few false gods. For example, Hawa, the god of desire. So if we were to become ibad, or servants of desire, what would happen to us? We would be destroyed. We would have self-destruction. We would not be able to live our lives in the best way possible. So it is indeed our nature to worship something and our best interest to worship Allah.
You have people who are free of the worship of God, who free themselves of the worship of the Creator. However, that's not to say that it's not replaced by the worship of something else. So you see people who don't worship God end up worshiping earthly pleasures, they end up worshiping money or power, they end up having addictions which become like a kind of worship because there is such a strong dependence on them. So man can free himself of worship of God's, man can free himself of God's worship simply because he has the free will to do so. However, that's not to say that it's a choice without consequence.
In our day-to-day experience, we can see how sometimes we are humbled to and infatuated by our desires. This is because realizing those desires is very important to man. And thus, he is prepared to humble himself before anything that may help him to bring about what he wants and to realize his desires. And this is probably how idol worshiping came about.
Idol worship is an aberration of the heart and mind. Idol worship is essentially the ego, because I think all idol worship stems from self-worship. Because there's going to be an element where you're going to be worshipping your ego, because your ego is that veil that prevents you from seeing the truth.
People used to worship idols because they thought they controlled the sources of what they sought. If they wanted a child or money or victory or good harvest, there was a god for each of them who could fulfill their need. It was sheer material need which made them to turn to God. And since God was so transcendent, they sought more immediate deities to talk to.
Many people find it very difficult to understand a transcendental God, a God that is everywhere, but at the same time so far away from us, a God who's all-powerful, but we're so impotent, a God who is living everywhere, but we will die. A God who is powerful to do anything, yet we can struggle to do anything. When there is that very big gap between where we are and where God is, there feels that there needs to be some sort of intermediary to get there. And that is where this idea of idol worship happens. And the idea that they can worship someone who acts as a mechanism to get to the purest God.
The big question is, why has God placed this sense of worship in man? Why are we instructed to worship him? Is he in need of us worshiping him?
Well, I would never want to worship a God that actually benefits from me. That would mean God is not God anymore. It means he's weak, he's needy. God's name is the free. Al-Ghani, he's free, he's independent, he's self-subsisting. That deserves to be worshipped.
Fundamental to the conception of God in Islam and in the Quran is that he is independent. He is needless. Huwa al-ghani. The verse continues, wa antum al-fuqara. You are the needy. You are the dependent. So God does not need our worship whatsoever.
Wa ma khalaqtu al-jinna wal-insa illa liya'budun. How should we interpret this verse in the Quran, which states that God has not created jinn and human being, but to worship him?
Some people misunderstand this ayah and think God just wants us to just be praying to him all the time and do nothing else, just pray, because we have no other purpose in life. Actually, all the other things, like, it's the same God who said, وَجَعَلْنَا لَكُمْ فِيهَا مَعَايِشَ. He put on the earth things for you to live well. He wants you to live well in this world. He wants you to dress well, eat well, sleep well, have a nice family, enjoy yourselves. He wants those things for you. And guess what? When you do them, you are actually fulfilling a command of Allah by utilizing the things he made for you.
People sometimes make objections as to why, if God does exist, he needs to be worshipped. Surely if God exists, he is free of any such need. Why do we have such a needy God who needs to be constantly told that he's right, that needs to be constantly told that he's great? However, really the truth is that, of course, God doesn't need to be worshipped at all. And we don't worship God because it is in any way adding to his being or taking away from it if we are not worshiping him. We worship God because we need to worship God, because we need to have a sense of grounding and a sense of direction. We worship God as a reminder of who put us on this earth, as a reminder of why we are here, and as a reminder of where we will ultimately end up. If we didn't remind ourselves of God and of his existence every single day, we would very soon forget. And then where would we be? Where would we be? We would be completely lost.
Thus, the only meaning that we can imagine for this verse is that worship brings us closer to him. And by him, we mean the absolute perfection.
If I want to get closer to perfection, or if I want to become perfect myself, I need to take this perfection or these attributes from the source of perfection.
Worshipping God is nothing to do with him requiring it. God is considered to be Ghani. He is needless of any of our worship. But at the same time, it is us who need that worship. We need this opportunity to really excel in this life. Why? Because that will help us in the hereafter, and it will help other people in this world. And that's the core essence of why we are here. We need to have this opportunity to excel.
So what is the purpose in this worship? The purpose in this worship is nothing more than for humankind's benefit, to help humankind move towards those pinnacles of existence and to take on those godlike qualities in their life.
The famous verse which states that God only created man and jinn to worship him clearly states that the aim of the creation is the journey towards God. And let's be reminded that God is the source of all perfection. Hence, the conclusion is this life is about worshipping him, i.e. is about taking this journey towards perfection.
There remains another essential question here. How should we worship God? Are rituals enough as worship?
Ritual performance is nothing if it isn't a means towards godliness and goodliness. And we see this throughout the Quran. Worship in its truest sense is servitude towards God, to become as God would like one to be. This isn't done through the performance of any ritual. Rituals are purely instrumental.
Worship means obedience. Worship means submission to the will of God. Worship does not mean that you should constantly sit in the direction of Mecca and continue to pray and pray and pray. As long as you are living your life according to the will of God and you're not disobeying, every single breath that you're taking is worship.
Too often we talk about worship solely in terms of ritual. We talk about worship solely in terms of doing things. Whereas worship in itself is the remembrance of God as God should be remembered. It is the remembrance of God in a way that reminds us of his greatness. And if what we are doing, whatever ritual we are performing, is not reminding us of the greatness of God, then really it is not an act of worship, it is mere ritual.
In other words, anything we do in this world in remembrance, love, and obedience of God can be regarded as an act of worship.
To summarize it is to love God, to obey him, and to worship him. And that translates in many things. Praying 5 times a day, doing dhikr, which is the remembrance of God,
actually being in service to your fellow human beings is also a form of worship if you're doing it for the sake of God. And that's worship in action in a way, when you're doing actions like serving others and giving acts of charity. Because we believe that acts of worship, but the only true worship if you do it for the sake of God.
Worship is an evolving process. And when one worships with an understanding of what God is, one always has to work towards perfection.
So our ritual fasts and prayers are not the only acts of worship. Our love for our family and relatives, any help extended to fellow human beings, to win bread for our dependents, could as well be regarded as acts of worship.
A vicar is remembrance. Look at the signs. Look at what is around you. And you will get the feeling that he is with you even though you don't see him. And the final step, which is excellence, al-ihsan, is to worship him as if you are seeing him. But how? Out of love. In kuntum tuhibbun Allah. Worshipping is to love, is not only to abide by the rules. You abide by the rules because you love. And you show your love because you abide by the rules. So it's a virtuous cycle, and this is the meaning of worshipping.
Apart from the acts we offer as worship, worship has an essence. Its essence is based on placing one's hope and fear in God alone.
Tawheed in worship means that the type of humility, obedience, fear, and hope offered to God should not be offered to anyone and anything else. This is the path to man's perfection, because it emancipates human heart and soul from all other types of worship.
Idol worshipping is considered a great sin, and the reason for this is because the very feeling instilled in man to bring him closer to God is diverted to leave him further away from God.
When you have a relationship with the one who is all perfect, because that's who he is, and he is the most beautiful, and he's the most perfect, and he's the most loving, then you want to emulate those qualities in your life. You want life around you to be more and more beautiful. You want more and more love in your life. You want more and more, you know, better and better things in your life. Because at the end of the day, this quest will come to a conclusion when you finally meet him and you actually get to see perfection itself.
But should we fear God or love him? Are fear and love compatible with each other? The Quran actually advises us that at the same time that we love God, we have to fear him as well. And different experiences of fear are mentioned in the Quran, or different levels of fear. Taqwa, khashya, shafaqa, rahba are but some examples.
The relationship between fear and love is one which is seen as a dynamic in Islam, okay, and often portrayed as such. They can be two sides of the same coin, okay? And fear and love are not wholly incompatible. Absolutely not are they wholly incompatible. Having said that, the predominant ethos of the Quran is one of love, okay, as is encapsulated in that repeated reference to God as being Rahman and being Rahim, the unqualified giver.
Every relationship comes with love and fear. Why is it so hard to understand with God? We have to love him, and we have to be afraid that he might be upset about something. But if your relationship in this world, if your relationship is only love and you're never afraid, like if I think about my wife, yeah, I love her, but I'm never afraid of disappointing her. I'm never worried about saying something that might hurt her feelings. I might think the relationship is perfect, but she might actually think that I don't care about her anymore. If my relationship with her is only about fear, oh my God, she's going to get angry. If I say something, she's going to get so mad, right? Then over time, I will lose all love for her. All that's left is fear.
We have to start with loving him.
Once we base our understanding on rationality, then you cannot but love him. Fear, of course, there are consequences to our decisions. These consequences can be consequences between us and God, or things that affect people around us. Punishments is part of the equation, is part of the existence. You take the wrong decision. The Quran states is that not that God has ascribed certain punishments to this wrong decision. Your wrong decision itself, in reality, has these negative consequences.
Taqwa is the beginning of all those different levels of fear, and it is the beginning of worship. It is faith put to application. It is fear of losing God's support and trying to win his favor. But our fear of God is not purely for the consequences. It is sometimes an awesome experience of his greatness.
Khashya is a fear as a result of knowledge and leads to action. It is when you know the greatness and the magnitude of what you fear, and as a result, you have reverence of it. There is another type of fear mentioned in the Holy Quran, which is referred to as rahb. Rahb is the kind of a fear that makes you very alert, very careful, and does not let you relax. It is like the type of fear that the students have during exam time. They're careful, they're restless, and they're concerned about their passing. It is also fear that you're afraid that you'll disappoint the one you love. The final type of fear which is mentioned is shafaqah. Shafaqah is the fear that some harm will come to a person you love. It is that type of fear. It is a fear that is mixed with love, such as the love of a mother for her children. She is fearful out of love for them.
If worshipping God is so important for the perfection of man, what happens if it is directed to concepts, objects, or persons other than God?
It's a divergence from the straight path. Does it have consequences? It does. Because we are meant to direct our thoughts and our actions with the unlimited being that is God. Once we attach ourselves to a limited form of existence, i.e. any form of an idol, because he's limited, our journey towards perfection will be very limited and very short, and it will hinder our progress towards perfection. So to free ourselves and to go back on the straight path to that endless journey towards the absolute perfection, we need to be free from idol worshipping and direct this energy and this fellowship to God and God only.
Well, when you worship your own desires, for example, avid materialistic culture, avid individualism, you have social breakdown and decay. If you look at the Children's Society report that was published in 2009, it came to the conclusion that our societies are breaking down because of what? Avid, excessive individualism. What's in it for me? I'm all right, Jack. And that, in a way, is worshipping the ego, is worshipping a false god. So it does have negative consequences in society, definitely.
Associating partners with God is an utter misjudgment. Now, that's because Allah is the reality, and what he invokes besides him is nullity. Chapter 22, verse 62, he is the only source of good, perfection, or existence. This implies those who evoke others besides him are under an illusion.
But fear is only one leg of worship. The other very important component of worship is hope. Hope to go closer to God and to be included in his favor and mercy. Hope to be good enough to be loved by God and to be granted his love in our hearts. It's only through these two components of fear and hope that the true worship is realized. And that is something that should be offered only to God and no one but God. fact, it is through worshiping God that we can expand and develop our God-given faculties. Associating partners with God would not only stop that process, but it is showing ingratitude towards our Creator. It is only by acknowledging that all beauty comes from God and all praise is due to Him that man can be accomplished. Join me in the next episode of Discovering Islam to talk more about the creation of man. Until then, peace be with you.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Thank you.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
آدم نباید نسبت به مؤمنین سوء زن داشته باشه، بدبین باشه. شما تو قرآن همتون سوره حجرات رو دیدید.
We Muslims must not be pessimist about our other Muslim brothers or sisters. We have in the Holy Quran, Surah Hujarat, that we must avoid different types of pessimism and suspicion. Many of our pessimism are sins. We must not be pessimist about our friends, colleague, relatives, spouse, or neighbor. We have in our narrations that even if we see something unpleasant in our surroundings, we must not consider it as something evil or a sin. For instance, if your friend reaches you without saying salams, or he shows inattentive towards you in a meeting, you must not be pessimist about this behavior of his and think badly about him or her. You cannot refer to such behaviors as complex or disease. Maybe your friend's mind is busy with something. Imam Ali alayhi salam stated, "Always find a justification for the strange behaviors of your friends. And if you couldn't find any excuse or reason for his behaviors, try your best to make one." This sentence of Imam Ali means that we must not be pessimist about some of the strange behaviors of the people around us. In this way, we might not keep any animosity inside our hearts. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.